Focus on Life.
Hello and welcome to Lucas on Life here on Premier Christian Radio. It's Sunday evening and today might well have been very busy for many of us. If you're actively involved in your local church, you've been serving perhaps. If you've got a young family, your day might well have begun with the weekly chaos and even tension of getting everybody sorted and out of the door to be at church on time. Maybe there was Sunday school involvement before the service, washing up teacups after the service, people over for lunch, another service earlier this evening. In other words, you've been rushing around all day. This last week, The Guardian ran a report about how as we get older, our perception of time changes. It seems to go by so quickly. The report talked about how we need to perhaps build more memorable moments in our lives. When life is just vanilla and bland, it rushes by. Over the last few days, I've been taking some time to think about the way I spend my time. Even though I retired from pastoral ministry last year, I still live a very busy life. Many work days stretch to 11 or 12 hours and they can begin early in the morning. I tend to live life at high speed. But I've been reflecting on that invitation that all of us Christians have received because it comes from Jesus himself. The Message version of Matthew 11, 28 through 30 frames it like this. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, Jesus says. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. It sounds wonderful. But the fact is that many of us struggle to find rest and rhythm in our lives. Ironically, I find that when I go fast, I end up being late. Trying to squeeze too much time in before I drive to an appointment, I calculate precisely how much time is needed for the journey, fret all the way, and even pray for red lights to turn green, and arrive white-knuckled, agitated, and delayed. And then I create complicated and yet more time-consuming problems by reacting rather than responding to situations that come into my life, rushing with mad haste to press send to an irritating email. I even eat at high speed, as if I fear that someone's about to steal my chicken, and I prefer the shampoo with the conditioner combined because it saves me time that it takes to rinse. And speaking of showers, maybe it's too much information, but I begin most days slightly damp because I don't want to hang around to fully dry off. Seconds matter to me. When my computer takes longer than usual to download my emails, I twitch and fear that it's turning into Stevenson's rocket. I know that life is a marathon and is designed to be a comfortable walk, but I tend to tackle it at a sprint. Perhaps worst of all, life in the fast lane becomes a blur. Laugh out loud moments that should be savoured are left behind in the dust as I move on to the next thing. My fear is that I'm going to continue to hurtle through the rest of my life at a rate of knots which will lead to maybe a premature death. My challenge isn't jet lag, I think it's life lag. As Lily Tomlinson famously said, in the rat race, even if you win, you're still a rat. I can't go on sabbatical, rent a monk's habit and go all contemplative or abandon my responsibilities, but you and I, we can stop to breathe, allow laughter to linger, refuse to allow the schedule to become a god and leave on a journey, maybe even an hour early, so that it becomes a trip and not a race. We can spend more time doing frivolous and useless things just for the sake of doing them. We can toast a sunset. Lest creation struts her stuff, and there be no applause for us in response. Of course, slowing down is easier said than done. Stephen Covey said, people expect us to be busy, overworked. It's become a status symbol in our society. If we're busy, we're important. If we're not busy, we're embarrassed to admit it. Busyness is where we get our security. It's validating, popular, and pleasing. It's also a good excuse for not dealing with the first things in our lives. Ouch. Busyness. Slowing down. Let's talk some more about it. I stared at the envelope and tried to halt the rising feeling of dread that sickened my stomach. Printed on the corner of the stern brown stationery was the logo of the Surrey Constabulary. I couldn't believe it. I'd been caught speeding yet again, the hapless target of a motorway camera. Now, please, let's be clear. I won't make light of my crime and try to extract any humour from my being caught speeding, because speeding kills people, and I was guilty. Never mind that I was only 4 miles over the limit, or that it seems that speed cameras have become a major source of income for local authorities these days. That's not actually the point, because I was speeding. Last time it happened, I was therefore forced to attend a speed awareness course. A sorry, shamed-looking group shuffled into a lecture room for a 3-hour event designed to show us just how devastating speed can be. I actually enjoyed the experience, thought it was a good presentation, so I stayed behind afterwards to thank the instructor for a good evening, who responded by looking at me as if I was quite mad. I graduated from the course, which was no great achievement because you just have to be there, and I vowed that I'd slow down, a pledge that I quickly broke with my excessively quick driving. As I said earlier, I live my life at speed, and sometimes when I'm so aware of that, I just can't think why I live like that. As I mentioned, savouring the flavours of food has never been my style. I just race through my food because I race through everything. I speed read, preferring to skim over sentences rather than fully digest the words. I multitask, steam through to-do lists, and fume in rush hour traffic jams where congestion means that the one thing you can't do is rush. I do get things done so that I can get on to the next thing. But there's always something else to do, somewhere else to go. Some other demand that insists that whatever I'm doing, it won't be for long. So I have been asking myself, why? Rushing, it seems, is an unconscious habit, one that's hard to break. I dash without thinking. I don't have to be late, under pressure, or behind schedule in order to be in a hurry. And so I'm realizing that slowing down, it takes conscious effort. In a world of fast food and ultra-high-speed Wi-Fi, it's easy just to go with the flow, even if the flow is a torrent rather than a trickle. And then I've realised that I rush simply because I always have. It's my default setting. I've no idea how long my mother was in labour when I came into the world, but I do know that I arrived early, very prematurely. Perhaps I took minutes rather than hours to make my appearance at birth, and having received a slap from the midwife, I proceeded to ask when school would be starting. It's true, isn't it? Slowing down is just so hard. Some of us, when we relax, we feel guilty. For me, going on holiday takes serious mental and emotional preparation. Suddenly finding myself without activity and the rush created by rushing, I can spiral down into vague depressiveness, enduring rather than enjoying those lazy days of sunshine. I've wasted too many beautiful moments because I've not been fully present in them, quickly dashing on to the next thing, which I hoped would be better, which it generally was not. Life lived like that. Life lived at speed becomes something to get through rather than to experience and savour. If we want to become more like Jesus, then a better rhythm won't be a luxury, but a necessity. He knew how to say no. At times, he evaded the madding crowds and commanded his friends to come apart for a while, presumably so that they wouldn't fall apart. Slowing down. We've got to do it. It was obvious to all that my sermon was coming to a close. Not only had I uttered the words much beloved by congregations everywhere, and finally, but in summarizing my key points of the sermon, it was clear that I was preparing to land the proverbial sermonic plane. This was further confirmed by members of the worship team ambling back on stage with the keyboard player poised to tickle the keys, final confirmation that this preacher was about done. But it was then that I sensed heightening tension, because everyone knew what was coming. It was a time of response, the altar call, as it's sometimes described. My friends in the Salvation Army have their mourner's bench, while Pentecostals in America often provide tissues for the convenience of the tearfully repentant. My listeners braced themselves for the response time. What followed was a surprise to all, including me. These response times, they're usually designed to cement the deal, as it were, at the end of a sermon. I think that they're important. I spend a lot of time in church gatherings, and the sermon lays down a challenge. The response time is the moment when the listeners pick up that proverbial gauntlet, engage their will, and decide. And the actual choice varies. It may be a step towards giving more financially, or just giving something. It might be that the person responding is deciding to become a Christian, or determining to pass the good news around more intentionally. Or someone might be turning their back on a destructive pathway currently being trod, or making a heart choice to mend a broken relationship. And those moments of response during a service, they can be very, very good. My own father, hardened by bitterness that encrusted him during 4 years spent as a half-starved prisoner of war, walked to the front of a church at the conclusion of a service because he was responding. He'd decided to follow Jesus. And it was really wonderful, but also a little bewildering too, as he walked forward without there being an actual invitation given. The pastor was sharing the end of the service announcements, otherwise known as the notices, so the mildly confused congregation couldn't figure out if Dad was coming home to Jesus or registering an interest in the ladies' embroidery group that meets on Tuesday mornings. Whatever the reason for the response, the opportunity to decide is good. But as part of our conversation tonight about rushing, all of this responding can at times add to our sense of tiredness. If you've been around Christian subculture for a while, you can start to get a bit worn out by it all, especially if you're in a church where an RSVP is extended every Sunday. We can feel overwhelmed by the continual barrage of coulds, shoulds, oughts, and musts. Now, I'm not suggesting that passive Christianity is the way forward. The church that's showcased in the New Testament, while not perfect, was certainly hard-working, yes, busy for God. But that same New Testament talks about the sense of rest. That is the heritage of every believer. We touched on that invitation from Jesus earlier in this program. Belief without effort is meaningless, but belief that's just about effort is exhausting. And so as I ended my sermon, I offered a rather unusual invitation. It went like this. I said, "Tonight, I want you to respond by doing this. Please do absolutely nothing except just sit down." That's right, sit down. Don't come forward, don't pray, don't feel compelled to make any decisions. Don't do anything except take the weight off your feet. The result in the congregation was unexpected. Some hesitated, nervous that a Christian gathering could actually conclude without the anticipated amen of a load of imperatives. Some people actually started crying as they just took their seats. Others said that they palpably sensed the presence of God in that moment. Maybe, just maybe, it was just the relief, the knowledge that being a Christian is not just about what we do for God, but includes resting in all that God has done for us. But after the service was over, numbers of people came up to say how significant the opportunity to just slow down for a moment, to just stop, to just do nothing. They said it had been very powerful for them. They simply sat down. So, what is Jesus doing right now? One biblical picture has him sitting down at the place of final accomplishment and ultimate comfort at the right hand of the Father. So tonight, if we've been busy for God, let me say this. Thank you for your tireless faithfulness, sincerely. And if some of us are hassled and frazzled and worn out and weary, why not just take a few minutes to just be with that seated Jesus and join him. As we come to the end of tonight's program, thinking about slowing down, some words from Ronald Rollheiser, who said, "It's no easy task to walk this earth and find peace. Inside of us, it would seem something is at odds with the very rhythm of things, and we are forever restless, dissatisfied, frustrated, and aching. We are so overcharged with desire, it's hard to come to simple rest." He's right. But truly, this week, God is willing to help us. See you next time.
Lucas on Life. At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.